All right, back on the Young Turks, Jen Canana with you guys. Members of the day are Lynn Johnson and Richard Worthington. If you're a member of the Young Turks, you get the full 2-hour show anytime you want it, ad free, and you get the postgame show and some of our other shows like Old School and Aggressive Progressives. Mm-hmm. And today in the postgame, I will show you a bathroom that I was in.
All right, okay. Sounds great.
It sounds unfortunate, but it is, in my estimation, exactly right. Okay, so you'll see, and it's a little political.
Oh,
only I could make a bathroom political. Anyway, members, hear that post game and by joining at tytnetwork.com/join. Now, let me read you one quick tweet, and then we got 1,000 stories. Davey M says the reason why Melania Trump never moved into the White House is that she knew that idiot she has for a husband wouldn't be there long. Maybe.
She's like, why put forth all this effort, move all my stuff? He's going to be back in a couple months.
And as we were talking about in the postgame yesterday, moving is a real pain in the ass.
It is.
She's like, absolutely. Oh, please, he'll be back here in no time. And apparently so. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. What's next, Anna?
All right. Chicago's Mayor Rahm Emanuel recently had an interview with Politico to talk about the current state of affairs here in the United States. And he had some advice for liberals, which is always really interesting considering the fact that anytime he talks about liberals, it seems to be negative. Now, Emanuel is worried. He thinks everyone in Washington is too focused on the crazy around Trump to see what's actually going on and what's not. So I'm going to get to his specific quotes. But understand that the gist of what he says is about how we spend too much. When I say we, I mean liberals in general, not we as the Young Turks, although we've gotten this criticism before. We spend too much time focusing on Trump and criticizing Trump. We should spend some time focusing on other things. For instance, the middle class and the working class, which is something that liberals do time and time again, and then they get criticized by centrist Democrats for doing so. But anyway.
Okay, before you go on with more quotes. So in that first quote, I was intrigued because if you're a progressive, you can make the case, hey, look, we should really focus on help get the wages of the middle class up, focus on their real life issues, and that would be a great case to make. So I was like, did he learn something? Is he going to go in the right direction here? I wouldn't agree to not talking about Trump. That's a weird thing to
he's say, our president, right? And he's doing something crazy every day. What do? You just ignore it?
Yeah, you can't ignore it. But I think we can walk and chew gum at the same time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we can attack Trump and tell you, hey, you know what? We should have free college education for kids so that we can have a vibrant middle class, $15 minimum wage, so we can have at least people earning a decent enough wage to be able to sustain their families, etc. So is that the direction that Rahm's going to go? Let's find out.
All right, he says the following. We don't talk about and fight for the middle class like we are. We believe we're for them, but they don't. If they don't hear we're for them, then we got a problem. It's not just for the string of policies. It's also a set of values that respect who they are in their lives. We come off and can come off as a party disdainful of them.
Okay, so in the beginning it sounded fine. Like, he's right, Democratic Party polls worse than the Republican Party. And that is unbelievable in the era of Trump. I mean, he's a deeply unpopular president. Mm-hmm. Somehow the Democrats are even more unpopular. How the hell did they manage to pull that off? Because they're ignoring the middle class. Again, I'm like, hey, I'm slightly encouraged here. We're going to go in the right direction. But then he starts talking about, like, it's not about the policies. Yeah, of course it is. Mm-hmm. That's what affects them. You know, whether they have health care or not is a policy issue. Whether their wages are higher or not higher is a policy issue. He says we have to talk to them in a way that we don't sound disdainful of them. I'm like, uh-oh, here we go. So this is where you reach out to them on social issues. Now, you're not deplorable. Mm-hmm. You're not in the basket of deplorables. Mm-hmm. You're a wonderful human being who happens to think that the South should have won the Civil War. Okay, so can you please come towards us anyway? This is the idea of appeasing Republicans and thinking that they'll come to your side, which has never, ever worked for the Democrats in my lifetime.
Right, and later on he talks about how it's okay to support Democrats who are running for office or running for re-election who happen to be against reproductive rights. And I understand that Bernie Sanders has supported a representative who has come out against reproductive rights. But with Bernie Sanders, I believe that it comes from a genuine place of, hey, I'm not gonna agree with this politician on everything, everything, but when it comes to the core values of what it means to be a progressive, this person, you know, follows suit. When it comes to economic justice, this person follows suit. With Rahm Emanuel, though, he has never struck me as a progressive or an individual who's cared about liberals, who's cared about the middle class or the working class. I mean, he's been in some of the most powerful positions imaginable, and what has he done? And even in that statement, you're right, Cenk, he talks about, it's not just about the policies. No, it's 100% about the policies. That's why during this last election, so many people were frustrated by the pandering that we experienced from the candidates. Hillary Clinton being one of them, right? The pandering about the hot sauce in her bag. No, 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 we don't care about the hot sauce in your bag. We care about what you're going to do for the working class and the middle class.
So, but I want to talk about that Mello endorsement a little bit more, because so this guy's running in Omaha, Nebraska, and so he doesn't agree with us on pro-choice issues. That's devastating, right? But that's why when the press asked me about, for example, the Just Democrats, that's the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, we say out of the 23 things in our platform, only one is non-negotiable. You're not allowed to be corrupt. You can't take lobbyist money or PAC money. Okay, everything else, like, it depends on where you're running. And I wish you agreed with everything, all 23 items in the platform. But I understand that you're going to have different positions on guns depending on where you are in the country. I get that, right? So if he was making a case like I think Bernie Sanders is making that case, if Rahm was making that case, again, I'd be super welcoming to it. But it turns out, no, he's not talking about that. He later says, no, we have to be more centrist. Okay, which means, and if you're not talking about policy and you're not talking about Trump, what's left? What's left is running to the right.
That's right. That's exactly right. And it's funny because the main criticism here was liberals are wasting too much time focusing on Trump. They need to address the middle class. And then for the remainder of the interview, the only thing he talked about was Trump. Let me give you an example. He's attacked Atlanta. He's attacked Philadelphia. He's attacked New York. He's attacked the gangs there. He's attacked Chicago. I noticed he never attacks suburban or rural areas for their opioid crisis. He talks about how to solve those problems. You have a huge opioid crisis in the suburbs, massive opiate heroin crisis. Now there, they don't get stereotyped or criticized. They get empathy. Okay, so yeah. That's the kind of stuff that we criticize him for too, because he's the president and he deserves to be criticized, especially when he's doing something wrong. I don't know. I felt like he came off as disingenuous, and it's also really, really interesting to me to hear such a centrist tell liberals how they need to act in order to appeal to people. No, you appeal to people by showing that you actually understand their issues and want to fix those issues.
And you want to fight for those changes. Now, look, you have to understand the context. It's not the first time we've heard of Rahm Emanuel, of course, chief of staff for Obama, and was in the Clinton administration. When he was chief of staff for Obama, he famously told a room full of progressives about how they were effing retarded for being liberal. Okay? And later in the article, he explains to Politico that he says we have to look to the suburbs and find the moderates. No. But on the policy positions, almost all 23 planks in the, for example, in the Just Democrats platform, polls at 60% or better. You already have the moderates. You already have the independents if you actually went with the policies that we're talking about. Expanding Social Security, not cutting Social Security, free college education, etc. All of these things, even immigration reform, they all poll at over 60%. The issue isn't getting moderates on our side. The issue is he doesn't want to do any of those things because the Democratic donors don't want him to do those things. So he wants to play identity politics, partly why he mentions the cities there. Of course, he's the mayor of Chicago, which is a city that gets attacked. That's fair, right? And so he doesn't want to talk about policies, even though the policies would get you the moderates that you're looking for, because he's not looking for moderates. He's looking to trick the voters and please the donors. So at the end of the day, it turns out it's the same old Rahm Emanuel doing the same old tricks. And he says, one more quote from him, talking to ourselves and persuading ourselves is not going to be the way to get a majority. In other words, don't fight for progressive positions. Talking to ourselves and persuading ourselves, meaning becoming progressive and fighting for progressive issues, is not the way to go, he explains. He says you have to go get a majority. That is code word for go further right to try to get right-wing voters.
As if the country hasn't gone right enough, right?
Yeah, and so that is a loser strategy. Because when you say that you're Republican light, the electorate says, okay, then why don't I vote for the real Republican? You just told me they're right. Okay, then I'll go vote for them and not you. Why would I vote for you after you undermined your own policy positions and told me the other side is right? In fact, you did that so much, I'll even vote for a guy who was polling at 37% on the day of the election. I'll even vote for a guy who's completely incompetent, a complete monster, because you told me that you don't believe in your own positions and I should vote Republican. So I did. And Rahm Emanuel hasn't learned a thing. Same old strategy from the same old corporate Democrats.
All right, moving on. Meet Tim Gerner. He is a wealthy individual living in Australia who recently had an interview with the Australian version of 60 Minutes. And during that interview, he addressed millennials and their inability to afford housing. And of course, I love when you hear from out of touch wealthy people who have all sorts of theories on why millennials can't afford to buy homes. Okay, so here's what he had to say. When I was trying to buy my first home, I wasn't buying smashed avocado for $19 and four coffees at $4 each. We're at a point now where the expectations of younger people are very, very high. They want to eat out every day. They want to travel to Europe every year. The people that own homes today worked very, very hard for it, saved every dollar, did everything they could to get up the property investment ladder. Okay. First of all, I would be shocked to find anyone who goes to Starbucks four times a day to buy $4 coffees. Maybe once a day, maybe twice a day, but four times a day, okay, you're exaggerating. Secondly, no one's spending $19 or $22 on avocado toast. That's crazy. Third of all, even so, even if someone does spend that kind of money on that kind of food and then stops, they still wouldn't be able to save enough money to buy a home. How do I know that? Because I just did like the most extensive investigation into several different countries that are having a housing crisis right now. And you cannot compete with foreign investors who come in with all cash offers, don't need to take out a mortgage, don't need to work with escrow, don't need a lender, come in, just make it rain, and they snatch up all the homes, okay? That's what's happening right now. So you wanna talk to me, okay? Someone living in Los Angeles experiencing this firsthand, that hey, Anna, if you just stop buying the avocado toast, you'll be able to afford a home. No, not buying it. This just shows how incredibly out of touch these people are.
So there's two different parts of this. One is, Anna's talking about the big cities, right?
No, it's happening in smaller cities throughout the country as well. It's happening in the Southeast, it's happening in the Midwest, it's happening in a lot of cities in the United States. And by the way, this is not just a problem in the US, this is a problem in Australia, in Japan, in Canada. We're seeing it all over the world.
Definitely in the UK. London had big time with it. Part of the reason is that folks in other countries like China and Russia and the Gulf, they gotta wash their money, okay? Mm-hmm. And so the reason they're coming in with cash is because of the laws set up in their own countries about what they can and cannot move through banks. Instead, they move it through cash and they lay down property and then they can't be traced. So it's a way to get their money out of, especially China, but certainly Russia as well and other countries. So now that's part of the phenomenon. It's driving up prices. You're not gonna be able to eat at an economical price enough to be able to afford houses in these cities that are way, way higher than what this guy's talking about.
Right.
But I actually think that even the bigger issue here is that everybody lives in their own bubble. So for the rich, like Tim Gerner, he actually does know a lot of millennials who eat avocado toast because they're his rich friends' kids. Mm-hmm. And then he looks at him and goes, oh, they look so entitled. They're not working hard enough. All they do is spending mommy and daddy's money. Well, for some of them, that's totally true. But what you don't see is poor and middle class millennials who don't have mommy and daddy's money to spend, who aren't paying $22 for avocado toast because they don't have the $22, let alone the money to buy a house. How many times has Tim Gerner hung out with a minimum wage worker? Mm-hmm. How many times has he hung out with guys who are working at McDonald's or Waffle House in the middle of the US or in Australia and thought, oh my, if he met those guys, he would be shocked.
Yeah.
He'd be like, wait, what? Like if he went and he just watched the videos on TYT Politics, when Jordan interviewed those guys who were working at a burger chain and they said, he asked them what their dream is, they hadn't bothered to dream about a better future because mm-hmm. all they knew was minimum wage. right?
Yeah.
And those guys you think are eating avocado frickin' toast?
It's ridiculous because it places all of the blame on an entire generation, right? They become the scapegoats, and it's a really great way of distracting people from what's really going on behind the scenes. Look, understand that I'm not expecting people to hand out houses. I'm not expecting it to be easy. I understand that home ownership is difficult, and it's not a right, it is a privilege. You work hard and you earn it, right? But here's the thing. Earning it has become incredibly difficult. It's become impossible because you have all of these things working against you. And it's not just one factor. It's not just that foreigners are coming in, but that has driven up the cost of prices, or I'm sorry, the cost of homes throughout the country right now. I mean, isn't it kind of interesting how wages continue to be stagnant, right? I couldn't understand what was going on. I'm like, we're not earning more money, right? This is currently a huge economic problem, but why are the prices of homes going up so quickly, so fast? And then you just do a little research, you do a little digging, and you find out you can't compete with cash buyers. You can't. And so now you have different countries throughout the world right now that are trying to pass like special taxes to kind of deter foreign investment. And look, foreign investment is good to a certain extent as well. You know, they build up certain towns that have been neglected, and let's say a certain city doesn't have the resources to do that. Foreign investment sometimes makes sense, but it's gotten so out of control that not only do millennials have to deal with a system that's rigged against them, that now they have to also deal with wealthy people from other countries coming in and snatching up opportunities as well.
Anna, if you just stop eating the avocado toast, then you could afford a multi-million dollar home.
Like, yeah, okay. So the next time a rich person tells me I need to eat crap in order to afford the basic necessities of life, I might get a little violent.
Okay, okay? No, don't do that.
Not literally, okay? I might get verbally violent.
Well, that sounds more like us. Okay,
yes.
Anyway, look, last thing about Tim Gerner. I guess we said it already. They just live in their own bubble, and it drives me crazy that they look around at all their rich friends' kids, and then they're like, "Oh, I don't know. Everybody's eating avocado toast. Why don't they eat cake?"
It reminds me of adults who talk about how they put themselves through college, like in 1960. Mm-hmm. Like, well, I put myself through college. You know, why can't you do it? Why don't you work while you go to school?
Yeah, because college cost 25 bucks back
That's
then.
That's right. Same thing with housing. Okay, housing. I love my parents, but they're also a little out of touch on this issue because they bought their house for like $100,000 back in like the 1970s or 1980s. I don't remember.
In LA.
A condo now, you'll be lucky if you find a condo for $500,000. Okay, so just keep everything in context and understand how much inflation has affected people, and our wages have not kept up with that inflation.
Super last thing. Mm-hmm. And the GI Bill put a lot of people through college. It was great, great, great. And then they're like, why don't you earn your way? But wait, I don't have the GI Bill. If I had the GI Bill, maybe I could do that, right? So you live in a totally different situation than I did. Ron Paul is like, oh, same thing. I worked my way through college. Dude, it costs you 12 cents per year to go to college when Ron Paul went to college, because he's like 1,012 years old, right? So, everything that they had a better, like Paul Ryan. Oh yeah, you should, Ayn Rand is awesome, and you should pull yourself up by the bootstraps. How'd you get through college? Oh, I got Social Security because my dad passed away, so the government gave me all the money I needed. Oh, is that right? Why didn't you just fucking pull yourself up by the bootstraps, Paul? Oh, you didn't, right? You fucking milked off the government, and now you want to burn the bridge right behind you. Fuck you, Paul Ryan. Fuck you, Tim Gerner, and all these guys who never ever live out or even consider what it might be outside of their fucking bubble. Okay, so you got me worked up.
Yeah, I like it.
Okay, what's next?
Let's take a break. Mm-hmm. When we come back, we have a 63-year-old woman spitting some truth to a representative.
And then Dave Chappelle apologizes. Mm-hmm. What did he apologize over? Because he's got some, have you seen his stand-up on Bill Cosby?
No, not Bill Cosby.
Okay, anyways, we'll get to Dave Chappelle too. All right, well, we're back on the Young Turks. Cenk and Anna with you guys. I want to give you one poll that I told you about earlier in the show. Should Hillary join the resistance or go back into the woods? That's tytnetwork.com/Hillary. So the real results are 22.5% say join the resistance. Mm-hmm. 77% say go back into the woods.
And look, I think the reason why so many people want her to go back to the woods isn't because they don't want people to join the resistance. I don't mean to speak for you, by the way. So if I'm wrong, let me know. I think it's because people don't trust her, right? I have no problem with people joining the resistance.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't come off as someone who's genuine about the resistance. She comes off as someone who is doing it for personal reasons, you know, personal gain.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, let me read some tweets. Mandy says, pretty sure if someone wrote What's Happening Now as a dystopian novel, it'd be slammed by critics saying, come on, no one is that stupid. It's true, it'd be a B movie, right? Mm-hmm. You wouldn't put a character like that in a real movie because it would be outlandish and unbelievable. Ishkabibble says, referring to Rahm Emanuel, he closed 50 schools in South Chicago. He's insane.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
I don't know that he's insane. I think that he's got other interests. The liberal mom says, things have changed since Bill Clinton. The moving right does not work anymore, she capped it. When will they get this? They'll never get it because they're moving right not because they think it's a winning strategy and that they're behind the times. They're moving right to please their donors so they can keep on getting those donations. Then they're retroactively justifying it by saying, oh, we need to capture moderate voters. How's that working out for you? Anyway, Savannah says, it's so hard to get ahead. If you've ever gone through a bad time and missed a credit card or car payment, you aren't getting a house. Now, good point. I forgot to mention in that story, 75% of Americans cannot survive a $700 debt. Like if they get a bill for $700 for whatever reason, right? Mm-hmm. They would then not be able to pay the bills. 75% of Americans. You're talking to me about fucking avocado toast? They have no idea what's going on in this country.
No idea. I wanna elaborate on that just a little bit in the post game because I have some stories that I think the audience would find interesting.
Okay, we're elaborating that on the post game, plus what bathroom I was in and how it's related to politics.
Okay.
TYTnetwork.com/join to hear that post game. And final one, bitchy gay guy writes in, oh shit, I had no idea I could afford a $400,000 condo if I just stopped paying Chipotle $1.80 for guac. Well, now you know, that's why you watch the show. Okay. All right, what's next, Anna?
All right. A GOP congressman was having a town hall where he discussed the Affordable Care Act and what he would like to strip away from it. This is Representative Rod Blum from Iowa. And in case you want a little taste of what he had to say about maternity care and the audience's reaction to it, take a quick look.
Such as a 62-year-old male having to have pregnancy insurance.
Okay, so just to give you a little more context, he was complaining about the fact that men also have to chip into the healthcare system in order to pay for things like maternity care. And I love the way the constituents there reacted to it because on the surface, you know, for someone who doesn't understand the nuance of healthcare, yeah, it sounds outrageous. Why would I have to pay for maternity care if I'm a dude? But the healthcare system doesn't just let you pick and choose specific things that you want to pay for yourself. It's paying into a system that makes healthcare a little more affordable for everyone, right?
So, well, Republicans are both, indifferent to your problems. Mm-hmm. Like, if it doesn't affect me, I'm a dude. Your pregnancy is your problem, not my problem. I don't want to pay for it. Right? But wait, we kind of need to do it together to have kids. That's how it works.
Yeah.
And see, I don't care. Second part of it is that they're not that bright. So that's why Paul Ryan did that press conference where he's like, under Obamacare, the healthy pay for the sick in the insurance system. Yeah, that's how all of insurance works. So if you didn't have the healthy going to the insurance system, then the sick couldn't afford it. You pay when throughout your life, and hopefully for a lot of it, you're healthy, and then you get it when you need it. Oh. But they're so stupid, they don't understand that.
No, what's also amazing is new data indicates that the life expectancy for people living in Kentucky is at an all-time low, okay? Mm-hmm. In modern times, obviously. And look, part of the reason why is because, you know, there's an opioid epidemic there as well. There's the factor of an unhealthy lifestyle for some. I don't want to make a generalization, but there are a bunch of factors playing into that. Okay, the healthcare system, again, I'm a healthy young person living in California, right? Why do I have to pay for people who live an unhealthy lifestyle? It's not fair to me, but that's not the way it works. You don't get to pick and choose. You know what I'm saying? Anyway,
it's totally unfair that I have to pay for cancer patients.
Yeah.
I don't have cancer. Why am I paying for these cancer patients when I don't have cancer yet? That's not how insurance works. Okay.
So there is an upside to this story. And the upside is a woman who goes by the name Barbara Rank. And she wrote a letter to her local paper in response to this, right? So here's what the 63-year-old had to say about it. Let's go to graphic 12. Why should I pay for a bridge I don't cross, or sidewalk I don't walk on, a library book I don't read? Why should I pay for a flower I won't smell, a park I don't visit, or art I can't appreciate? Why should I pay the salaries of politicians I didn't vote for, a tax cut that doesn't affect me, or a loophole that I can't take advantage of? And so that got a lot of positive reaction. And I think she makes such a good point, right? That's the way the system works. There are so many things that we pay for that we don't benefit from, right? But the reason why we pay for it and our tax money goes toward it is because we're supposed to live in a civil society. We're supposed to take care of one another. I know it's like a weird thought because everything is so individualistic right now, but we're supposed to be a community. That's what patriotism is supposed to be about.
And it's not just to help others. You can't build certain things unless you work together, unless you pull your money together. So in order for you to have a sidewalk in front of your house, you also have to help pay for sidewalks all across the city. And you're not going to use 98% of those sidewalks. That doesn't mean, no, we'll only build a sidewalk in front of my house and damn all your houses. That's not how it works. We have to build roads so we can all travel on the roads, and bridges and schools and hospitals, etc. But the Republicans go, no, I just want mine. And if it doesn't affect me, it's your problem, not my problem. But that's not how we built this country. That's not how you ever build a civilized society.
And it will affect you, right? Like if you hoard all your money to yourself and society is crumbling all around you, do you want to live in that country? You want to live in a country where roads are crumbling, where bridges are falling apart? I mean, we're kind of already living in that country, unfortunately. But if things got even worse, would they enjoy that? I mean, you can only build so many moats around your estate. You know, at some point, you're going to be living in a terrible condition just because you want to hoard all your resources for yourself. And by the way, I mean, same thing with education. Property taxes go toward funding public education locally, right? A lot of people don't even have kids. So why should they have to pay for it? Because we don't want to live in a country full of idiots. That's why, okay? You want innovation. You want your country to compete in a global economy, right? You want to be a freaking patriot. And for some reason, we have lost that identity.
And by the way, it winds up coming to help you anyway. Because then if you have good schools, even if you don't have kids, property values rise. Then your house is worth more. Hey, look at that. You did the right thing. And it turned out to be a good thing for you. When you pay for kids' education, they wind up being successful business people, and they create more jobs, and the economy's better, and you're better off. That's why we work together. If you want a libertarian paradise, I got one for you. Go to Somalia. They have almost no laws there. How's that working out?
All right, moving on to some other news. Right after Donald Trump got elected, Dave Chappelle was on Saturday Night Live, and he made the case that maybe it makes more sense to give our new president a shot before being super judgmental. However, recently Dave Chappelle has completely apologized and taken back those statements. Now, to give you the exact statement he said previously, I'm wishing Donald Trump luck, and I'm going to give him a chance. And we, the historically disenfranchised, demand that he give us one too. So that was his initial statement. Fast forward to today, and he says, I was the first guy on TV to say, give Trump a chance. I effed up, sorry.
So it's a funny thing to apologize for giving someone a fair chance, right? But I think he should apologize. And I'll tell you why. Look, that sounds funny, but it's not like Donald Trump came in with a blank slate. So if you say, hey, we don't know this guy at all, give him a shot, I agree with you. Of course, if I don't know him at all, why wouldn't I give him a shot? Especially as a progressive, of course I'd give him a shot, right? But we knew who Donald Trump was. Mm-hmm. It's not like he's going to change magically overnight.
It's not like he was trying to hide who he really was. He was one of the most transparent candidates imaginable. Just completely shared how hateful he was, and people liked it.
Yeah. So now people will still criticize Dave Chappelle, saying, oh my God, we're only a little past 100 days in his administration, and you're already making a decision on him. What more evidence do you need? During the campaign, he bragged about sexually assaulting women and getting away with it. He proved throughout his whole life of his complete incompetence in business and otherwise, 6 bankruptcies, etc. He would say about how he doesn't care about other people. And then in business, caring about other people is a disadvantage. You don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. He would scam people out of money like he did with Trump University. And the list goes on and on. So when he came in, we knew who Donald Trump was. Giving him a chance doesn't really mean anything, right?
Right. Look, and the reality is we covered every single part of the election. So we were very aware of what he said in every debate, both during the primaries and during the general. And so it's fine if someone isn't engaged in politics as much and missed all those things. But what I give Chappelle credit for is that he was willing to change his opinion, right? He was willing to revisit this issue and realize, yeah, you know what? Gave him a shot. He's terrible. I apologize.
Yeah.
And so you got to give him credit for that, because a lot of people, especially Trump supporters, don't want to be proven wrong. And so even if Trump kicks them in the face, they'll go ahead and say, no, love him. Definitely in the approval rating component of the polls, you know? And it's insane.
Yeah, well, I'm missing teeth because he kicked me in the face, but I've got a lot more ventilation now in my mouth. So thank you, Trump. So look, Chappelle, don't get anybody wrong, was never a Trump supporter. Mm-hmm. He was saying, hey, look, give us a shot in a disenfranchised population and we'll give you a shot. And then a couple of months in, it's super obvious that Trump is not doing that. So he's saying, nah, it was a waste of our time to think that he would ever change. And he's right about that.
Yep. All right, real quick, one more story before we call it a day. We called it. Bill O'Reilly will be joining forces with Glenn Beck on The Blaze. They will be teaming up to do weekly discussions together. In fact, Bill O'Reilly said, we're going to do that every Friday until Beck gets tired of me. And it's a good outlet for me too, you know, discuss things back and forth with Beck, who's a good friend. We don't agree on everything, but it's very lively. It's such a great Christian thing to do, you know, to hire someone like Bill O'Reilly. I mean, nothing says Christian values like having a serial sexual harasser as part of your company.
Yeah. So I don't know to what degree he's paying him. And Beck's finances is apparently an absolute disaster. So probably O'Reilly, who has an enormous amount of money, is probably doing it for either free or close to free. But these guys didn't get along before, and O'Reilly is a Trump supporter, and Beck is not, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And at Fox News they had some beefs, but now that they're both been kicked out, mm-hmm, all of a sudden they're getting along a little bit better. Now that O'Reilly needs an outlet, all of a sudden, before Glenn Beck was like an amusing little guy he would have on, and he was Papa Bear at Fox News.
Right.
And when Glenn Beck left, he didn't shed a tear at all. But all these guys, and especially their conservatives, right? They're like, oh, it happened to Glenn Beck. Who cares? They run him out of town. Wait, you're running me out of town? Oh my God, it turns out Fox News runs people out of town. Hey, Glenn, I'm sorry, man. I'm trying this podcast thing, but like 13 and a half people are listening. It's a total disaster. Can I come on your show? And Beck's like, okay, who's Papa Bear now? Mm-hmm. So that's what's happening here. Glenn Beck needs the audience and needs money. His Blaze is a blaze. Mm-hmm. Apparently, that's why they named him a blaze, because they take a pile of money and then set it ablaze. Okay, and O'Reilly desperately needs some outlet, because without Fox News, it turns out nobody really wants to listen to him.
Real quick, how clear is it that these dudes have such a deep disdain for women, period, right? So Glenn Beck fires the one person who got any attention on The Blaze, Tommy Lauren, because she had the audacity to make sense once in her life about reproductive rights. And then he fires her and then decides to work with Bill O'Reilly, who was pushed out of Fox News because he was sexually harassing too many women. It's insane.
It probably never occurs to him that that's not the Christian thing to do. Okay, we're out of time, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you in the postgame if you're a member. TYTnetwork.com/join. Thank you for joining us.
Bye-bye.